Kick it off by welcoming back Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. And Elliot, first of all, welcome back to the program. And second of all, the Vancouver Canucks will face off against the Colorado Avalanche this evening. It is an early start for them. It is 6 o'clock Pacific. That's when the puck drops in Vancouver. We all recall last week the kickoff of the road trip, 7-1 against these very same Colorado Avalanche. What is the latest, and this is all sort of under the umbrella of the meeting yesterday between the owner and the general manager, Friedge?
So, first of all, bear with me. I'm still getting my voice back. You know, the Vancouver thing, what I think has happened here, Jeff, is that the start of the year has caught the organization by surprise. I think you expect certain potential outcomes. We're going to be good. We're going to be battling for a playoff spot. You know, there's the Arizona this year of we know we're going to be bad and we're going to try to grit our teeth through it. And there's also, you know, someone's going to be a lot worse than they hope. I hope it's not us, and I'm going to pray it's somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then you realize, oh my goodness, we're a lot worse than we thought we were going to be, at least early. And that's where Vancouver is. I you know, this was supposed to be their year. And look, let me just say one thing at the beginning. The Vancouver fans and I, we sparred each other from time to time over the reactions to things that happen out there. This is not one that I would ever say, you know, the fans are wrong on or the fans are wrong to react to. This was supposed to be a big year for the team and the expectations were there. And I think they're reeling top to bottom. And I don't think it's just the owner or the GM or the coaches or the players. I think it's everybody in the organization is reeling from top to bottom about the way this started. And what I think the last 2 days were about, with ownership on Monday and sort of with ownership and the GM and everybody else yesterday, was how are we going to fix this? And I think the question the owners were asking to each other was, if we can't fix this, where do we go from here? And, you know, yesterday I reported that there wasn't going to be any like GM change or anything like that. So I'm not surprised there wasn't, but I think everybody now knows that we're on the clock. And if things don't get better, you know, like for one thing, like I was listening a little bit to some of our guys on the radio station in Vancouver, and you know, those guys out there, they know the market dynamics better than I do. And you know, I heard some of them saying, hey, if it's bad in there tonight against Colorado, well then maybe they make the change. And I have to tell you, like, I'm not questioning any of the guys who work out there because they know the market. They know the Canucks better than I do. But if that's the true process, Jeff, that's insane. Like, you cannot make your decisions based on how the crowd might react tonight. Now, if your ticket sales are really plummeting, yes, that can happen. But you can't do it based off one night's reaction. But what I do think is that everybody there now knows you're in kind of in a crisis situation. So at least in the way you're playing on the ice. So if we don't fix this, mm-hmm. something's going to happen. It can't stay like this.
Well, the one thing that I wonder about here is the schedule, and this is a 3-game homestand for Vancouver. And we've said it before. We've talked about it before. If you're going to be bad on the road. Don't be bad at home.
Stink on the road.
Stink on the road. Don't stink in front of your own fans. And you look at tonight, they'll face off against the Avalanche. That is a tough test, as we all know. And then they'll face the Winnipeg Jets, who will have been coming off a game against the Edmonton Oilers. So it's a back-to-back for Winnipeg. And then we'll see them face off against the Blackhawks team that'll be playing after having played the Oilers the night before.
Yeah.
So if we're going sort of section by section, the 3-game road trip is one, the 3-game homestand is another. You know, this does line up to be a positive homestand, notwithstanding a tough game against Colorado to kick it off, but it does line up to be, like, there's no gimme games in the NHL, but this is a 3-game homestand where things have lined up for Vancouver. You know, you're going to catch Winnipeg on the second night of a back-to-back, and ditto for the Chicago Blackhawks. It almost feels more like, okay, if the team can't do it given this schedule, then do we look at making a decision? Does that sound more palatable?
You know, excuse me. I think that that's all, like, those are all factors, right? I remember, you know, Jeff, I was watching you last Saturday talking about Dallas, right? Yeah. And the situation that they're going in. And someone pointed out to me, so they're sitting at home on Friday night and Philly gets a big emotional win in Carolina. And then they've got to fly 3 hours to Dallas to play back to back. Like, that should have been a schedule victory for Dallas. And they won it. And then they won another big one last night against Detroit. Okay. Like, there are some games during the season where you look at the schedule and you have to, and you say, this gives us an advantage. Now, the funny thing about this is I do remember there was one night I did when we had the rights, we did a Vancouver regional game on a Sunday night, and it was against Washington, and Washington played on Hockey Night in Canada on the Saturday. And I said at the beginning of the show, well, this should be a schedule advantage for Vancouver, so you've got to jump on them quick. And John Garrett hammered me, like, in the first 10 seconds of the broadcast. So they threw it to – Brad Fay was hosting. They threw it to Shorthouse and Garrett. And Garrett's like, I'm listening to Elliot Friedman talk about a schedule victory. Well, the Canucks have the worst schedule in the NHL, and they should get a schedule victory for time to time. And I'm sitting there, and I'm laughing. I'm saying, that's not kind of what I was trying to say, but okay. So, yeah, there's no question that this is one of those rare situations where the Canucks, who generally have a terrible schedule, will have some advantage. But I just think – you know, like I just think at the end of the day, they have to play better. And, you know, to me, I know all the focus is on Benning and Green. You know, to me, the biggest question is Pettersson. You know, like you could have Scotty Bowman and, you know, pick your GM, Bill Torrey, as the general managers of this team. And if Pettersson, you know, so Pettersson, we get that Sport Logic stat pack every day.
Yep.
Excuse me. We get that Sport Logic stat pack every day. And, you know, Pettersson's in, I think he was, when I checked yesterday morning, I think he was top six in cycle chances. But other than that, like, he's nowhere. And you know, 2 years ago in the 68-game season, I think he had 24 goals from the slot in 68 games. This year he's got none. Like, there's something wrong there. And, you know, it's never on one player, but when he is struggling, it takes down Vancouver's offense because he's that important. And, you know, I don't think, like, it's not like they aren't trying. I think they've been meeting with him. I think they've been trying to get him going. But I think the Pettersson thing is a major reason why they aren't successful. And that, to me, like, you can talk about the GM, you can talk about the coach, and in moments like this, nobody escapes anything. You can talk and the players, and I do think the organization, one of the reasons they're not making knee-jerk decisions with the coach and GM is because they want the players to feel that they have to have ownership to get out of this too. That, to me, is the number one question the Canucks should be asking is, what do we have to do to get this guy going again? And what does he have to do to get himself going again? Because, like I said, it's not on any one player, but when he goes down, a good chunk of their offense goes down with him.
So we'll see what happens tonight between the Vancouver Canucks and the Colorado Avalanche. This game is huge as it kicks off the three-game homestand. To that Dallas point previous as well, you could almost look at both of those games as scheduled victories. Detroit had just played the night before against the Columbus Blue Jackets as well. So they caught Philadelphia and they caught Detroit, but Dallas, at least for now, some of the heat is off of that team. Pittsburgh Penguins, Friege, I think this caught a lot of people by surprise. Certainly did me. I wonder if it did you. Yesterday, the Wall Street Journal reporting that Fenway Sports Management, who own the Red Sox, Liverpool FC, in the process of purchasing the Pittsburgh Penguins, Mario Lemieux would retain a minority stake in the team. Ron Burkle would be out. David Morehouse would stay. What can you fill us in about this impending sale, if it is indeed an impending sale?
I have to tell you that one of the things that happens with these things is everyone just says, be careful, nothing's done until it's done. But this is advanced. Like, this is advanced. This is close. Now, again, it could, you know, in the business world, you never say anything is done until everything's signed. But it's in very, very advanced stages. And it could be soon, which is why I think it got out. Right. You know, I think a lot of people are very curious about the number, Jeff. I want to be very careful how I say this because I don't want to radio myself. I think there was hope they could get the number to 900 million. And if they do, then I think that's a big victory for the league. I wonder what it's going to do to other situations around the league. You know, there's been reports that there was more than one group poking around at this. And if the number is going to be that high, then I could see other teams saying, you know, what can we get for us? You know, I heard a rumor, and it's never been confirmed to me. Nobody would confirm it to me. That a couple of years ago, when the Penguins were for sale, the league said nothing under 750. And I know that's happened with Ottawa. Like, I know, you know, we've reported before, Ottawa did get one offer a couple of years ago where the league said, we're just not doing that. It's not what we value what the team is at. And, you know, so, like, I'm curious to see if that's going to, if it's going to have an effect where some other teams start to look at what's available out there for them. And, you know, if what I heard was true, and I suspect it is, that if you were in a position where you couldn't get 750 before a few years ago, and now you get around 900, that's a big win for the league in terms of your franchise valuation. So I'm really curious to see where this is all going to go and what this is all going to mean. I'm also very curious to see, Jeff, if Fenway's ultimate goal is their own streaming content of the Penguins, the Red Sox, and, as you mentioned, Liverpool. Because now you've got teams for all seasons, right?
Yes, you do. You know, I was curious about the same thing. If that number can get up to a certain spot, as we all know from an ownership point of view, sports is generally an equity play, and this could be a time for a lot of operators here now to say, okay, I'm gonna cash out. Like, I wonder how much of an ownership changing of the guard we'll see in the NHL. That's one of the things that I'm curious about. The other thing that I'm curious about, Elliot, is with Mario Lemieux still in the picture, but in a very minority play, holding a very minority piece. You know, what does this mean for the future of Malkin? What do you think this means for the future of someone like Chris Letang? They're both playing on expiring deals. You know, Crosby is Crosby, and I don't think that there's, well, maybe I shouldn't say, but I don't feel like there should be any concern about his position through all of this. But there's always sort of been a feeling that Crosby and Malkin were hands off, do whatever you want with the team, but hands off of Crosby and Malkin. You know, Chris Letang believed to have some protection there as well. New ownership group comes in, Mario Lemieux in a minority stake position. What does this mean for, I guess, a player like Malkin specifically?
The thing that I heard you talking about with Marchese about Rutherford, what I had always heard was that there was something in the contracts that said you needed ownership approval to trade Crosby or Malkin. Mm-hmm. And I think in that kind of case, you probably would, like, even if you didn't have it in your contract, you'd probably still have ownership approval for something like that. But I was told that that was always what happened. Like, it was in your deals. You had to have written permission. So I don't, like, the thing is, like, to me, it almost becomes a hockey decision. You know, Malkin this year, one of the things people have kind of wondered was if there wasn't the Olympics, would he even be able to play? Like, he wants to play for Pittsburgh. He wants to play for Russia. But that was a pretty significant knee injury. And the Olympics are a big deal for these guys. We all know that. So, like, when I look at this kind of thing, I wonder if it becomes as much a hockey decision based on the direction of the team as anything else.
Speaking of teams, the Anaheim Ducks again last night. That was, I can't remember the last time when I looked at an 11-game schedule. I circled Anaheim as a game that I had to watch. But Anaheim and Washington last night was the game of the night. Anaheim extends their winning streak to 8. Trevor Zegras channels his inner Jack Hughes and does the celly and throws the stick over after scoring the overtime winner. Listen, Troy Terry is on a 15-game point streak. Getzlaff gets his 1,000th point. Zegras with a couple of goals, including the OT winner. And all of a sudden, the Anaheim Ducks are tops in the division. Elliot, just like we predicted, right?
Well, you know, that whole division was, we all talked about what a toss-up it was. Vegas and the 7 week siblings, I guess. I mean, and now look what's happening. There's Anaheim, there's San Jose, you know, Vancouver has struggled. I think Calgary's been better than we thought. Edmonton's been really good. It's a better division than we thought it was going to be, right?
Yes.
And I would say, like, one of the things that's really stood out is how good Getzlaff looks. You know, and how good Troy Terry looks. You know, there are, I don't know where the Anaheim GM search is going to go. I don't think anybody knows that yet. I've heard they've really sat down this week to try to figure out how they're going to go about it. But, you know, people are going to want that job.
Yeah.
You know, the Ducks have, they've always been good at finding talent. They haven't always maximized their ability to use it, but you know, people are going to look at that roster and they're going to say, and some of the young players there, and they're going to say that, you know, that's not a bad place to be. And, you know, I think too, like Dallas Eakins there, you know, right now you're kind of coaching a little bit without a safety net. You know, yeah. You're in the last year of your deal. You've got some tumult going on around you. You know, at the end of the day, all you control is what you can control. And what the players can control is the way they play. And they're playing.
So one of the things, and you and I have talked about this before on the podcast and maybe even here as well, about Anaheim is Bob Murray, ex-general manager of the Anaheim Ducks, really didn't do anything to help the team in the offseason by way of player personnel specifically. And I throw that in there because someone reminded me the last time I said this that, hold on a second, a very quiet move that was made that has helped the Anaheim Ducks this season specifically was bringing Jeff Ward in on the bench specifically to run the power play. Now Anaheim's power play is fourth in the NHL. Like, I know that Murray didn't do a ton in the offseason. You're Dallas Eakins, you're wandering into the final year of your contract saying, wow, I'm not getting any help from the GM here. I'm just going to have to hope that the guys get better and the young kids continue to progress. But I think one of the quiet stories around the Anaheim Ducks is Jeff Ward, who we last saw, of course, you know, behind the bench with the Calgary Flames. So that's a good one, and that is a very quiet one there. Hey, do you have any idea? Because I'm scratching my head here. Any idea why the Maple Leafs would pick up Kyle Clifford?
First of all, there's a long history between him and the general manager, right?
So when Kyle Dubas was with Uptown, I think Kyle Clifford might have been his first client.
His first client, yes. And, you know, first of all, I wouldn't be surprised if St. Louis and Toronto looked at it as, you know, if like St. Louis's American Hockey League team is in Springfield and they share it this year, if I remember correctly. Maybe I should check on that. Maybe that was last year. Okay, don't quote me on that. I have to double check it. But St. Louis's American Hockey League team is in Springfield. part of it to me would be that if Kyle Clifford's going to play in the American Hockey League, this is probably a better spot for him. Mm-hmm. And you know, obviously Dubas's history with him. And you know, Dubas likes to have positive people around his AHL team, right? You know, Rich Kloon, obviously, Clifford. And I see a lot of reasons, and you never know, like there could be a time you could use them. This is kind of like, this is a year where you can't have too many players, right? We're seeing that right now with all of the COVID situations. You can never have too many people that are useful. So I think between all of that, I was actually annoyed at myself yesterday. Why didn't I think of that mm-hmm. might happen once he cleared waivers? Because it makes perfect sense.
Speaking of the St. Louis Blues, they most recently called up Scott Perunovich. Listen, we understand that's why the Kyle Clifford, you know, wave was made to clear up some space here. Perunovich playing in his first game, so he's up now. And so how do you see Perunovich fitting in on that blue line, and does that give you any indication which way the St. Louis Blues could be leaning early on this season? Because now we're getting to the point, Elliot, where teams are starting to make up their decision about whether they're going to have a good season or not, and how do they adjust themselves accordingly?
Well, you could see how disappointed they were last night losing that game to Arizona. You could just see it on their faces.
That was a tough one, man.
You could really see it on their faces. Well, first of all, they wanted to have Perunovich up a long time ago. Like, this is a guy who's been ready to, who's showed by the way he started the season for Springfield, that he's been ready to play in the NHL for some time. And they didn't have the cap room to bring him up. St. Louis actually appealed to the league for relief. And one of the things they wanted to do was something that I have been suggesting, not that they're going to listen to me, which is, you know, use it like a bonus overage. You know, Perunovich's bonus is St. Louis didn't have the cap room to bring him up. So I was thinking, you know, use it like a bonus overage. If it has to go into next year's cap, do it. But the league is not comfortable with that, and they haven't agreed to do it. That's why St. Louis couldn't bring him up. And I think they were frustrated. I think the player was frustrated because it was very clear he was ready for a shot at this level. I just think that that's a little bit too soon, though, Jeff. Like, you know, Perunovich is going to be a good player, and I don't really doubt his ability in any way, shape, or form. But until you really know and see what he can do over a few games, I don't know if you're making any crazy determinations over that. You know, I think St. Louis has high hopes, and they started really well, obviously. And the one thing we've learned about Doug Armstrong is that, you know, he's turned over his team a little bit. He's definitely put Thomas and Kyrou in better positions to have more time and be more successful. But a couple of years ago, he was pretty close to blowing up his team, and he held on and they won a Stanley Cup. So I think he's generally, he's proven that he's patient. That's for sure.
It's true, but it does seem as if, you know, whether it's Perunovich, you mentioned Kyrou, you mentioned Robert Thomas, you know, Jake Neighbors played 9 games with the same. It does feel like there's a change that's happening right now with the St. Louis.
I think they recognize they needed their new blood internally, and you have to go, and there's going to be times you start the year 5-0 or whatever it is they did, and there's going to be times you lose that game to Arizona. Like, that's just the way it goes.
Real quick, before we let you go, in the second hour, I'm going to play a little bit from our podcast with a gentleman by the name of Mike Ford, who's the executive chairman of Sportsology, a talent management company. The nature of the conversation is about building front offices. And just a quick word from you as we wrap up here, Elliot. We know how crucial these next hires for Chicago are going to be. We mentioned Anaheim. Yeah. We know how crucial the next hire is going to be for the Anaheim Ducks. But can you not make the argument to the next hires or the decisions to keep people at every level right now, it seems, in the NHL is more crucial than ever, as no one in this league, considering what it has been most recently through, can afford to make any mistakes here right now?
Well, I just think the consequences for not having a good search or a good process are higher than they've ever been. And I don't know how anybody could really argue that. And, you know, the thing that I liked about Ford, and I re-listened to it yesterday, and I looked over some of my notes again as I was writing the blog for today, is that the thing I liked the most about what he said is that, you know, it shouldn't be out with the old, in with the new. It should be get rid of what no longer works with the old, but recognize there are things that still are sensible and merge those with the strengths, with people who have the strengths to adapt what is new. And, you know, because I really do think that. I think that when people say the old is the old, I mean, I see it in the media business all the time. It leads to bad decision making. And so what he says is you take the old, you merge it with the new. And the thing that I really thought about the most, Jeff, is that it shouldn't be about scouting versus analytics, like eye test versus analytics, which I think is a tremendously stupid debate. It should, the most successful people, he talked about Billy Beane, that's the person who can communicate up and down your organization and make sure that everybody understands what's important to him and what they need to know and how they're going to act on it. Like he said, the most successful people year after year are the people who can communicate what's important and how they're going to act on that importance. And everybody who needs to know knows how to implement it. And I just think it's really smart. Maybe it's basic to a lot of people, but I just think it's really smart.
A lot of this is going to be new for the NHL. This is not generally how decisions have been made in this league, but it does very much seem like there's a turning of the page as it comes to analyzing your own organization and your hiring practices. Okay, Friedge, great stuff. Welcome back, pal. We'll chat again soon.
All right, buddy. Good to chat with you, Jeff.